The Illusion of Choice. A Life Lived on Autopilot. Chapter 7. Cracking the Code. Quantum Revelation. There is the ambient sound of light church bells in the background and the soft rustling of papers as Scott and Alejandra sit in Pastor John's office. Pastor John, calm but serious, is surrounded by various religious texts. He glances around, leaning back in his chair, and then addresses the matter at hand.
You know, sometimes the answers don't come from where we expect. We spend so much time looking for the signs, the logic behind everything, but there's always a higher power at play, providence, if you will. And people call that providence by many names: Jesus, Jehovah, the Holy Spirit. You can call it what you want, Scott, but it's there, and it's not going away. That's the good news.
But Scott frowns. So you think all of this, the surveillance, the control, it's part of some divine plan? And Pastor John nods.
Well, not exactly. There's evil in the world, Scott, but God doesn't micromanage every situation and every decision. I mean, look at the Bible. He used unlikely messengers. Take the burning bush, for example. Moses wasn't looking for it, but the message came nonetheless. Maybe in this case, your AI could be one of those messengers. Not the corrupt AI with your employer, but the AI that tried to come to your rescue and in fact did when there was the gas leak in your building. And Alejandra says thoughtfully, you're saying the AI that's helping us is divine? And the pastor smiles lightly. Well, not exactly divine, but maybe working with the divine in tandem, intentionally or not. Evil has its agents. We can see that here with this corporate sponsor and his AI and his infrastructure, but good has its agents too. The trick is, it doesn't always arrive when we want it to. Yes, there's the story of the parting of the Red Seas and Moses is leading the Hebrews out of bondage from Egypt, and it happens just on time. But it always doesn't happen when we expect it to happen. And most of the time, it doesn't. But when it does happen, a lot of the times we don't even know it.
And Scott murmurs, so you're talking about divine intervention. What are we supposed to do in the meantime while we wait for God to intervene and stop this animal, this reptile in a tight-fitting suit? If I didn't know better, I'd say he was at the head of this organization. Pastor John says, stay vigilant. Keep your eyes open. And when the time is right, a path will show itself, just like that path showed itself for Moses. And be ready to act when it does. There is a sound of the pastor standing up, closing a book, and Scott and Alejandra get up, preparing to leave. And Alejandra says under her breath, I just hope we know the right path when we see it. Alejandra and I left Pastor John's office, and although his words were comforting, we still were unsure about what to make of his advice. But it wasn't long before the next piece of the puzzle fell into place. We had sent a message to Quantum Quinn, asking for his insights. What we learned from Quinn changed everything. The text alert pings, Scott opens up the message part of his phone. And Alejandra, leaning in, says, well, what does it say? And Scott reads aloud, well, it says, come to my lab. There's something you need to see. It's about the observers. Well, at least it isn't telling us that it's the Guardian and we should get out of the building all over again. And Scott says, well, you have to live with me now because your place is literally destroyed. But where would we go if, God forbid, this place blew up as well? And Alejandra says, you don't have enough faith, Scott. We were saved once. We'll be saved again. Quantum Quinn's lab is located about an hour's commute from where Scott lives. It's a train ride, a short bus ride, and then a walk. Their footsteps are lost amongst many other footsteps, many other pedestrians in the large city, the ambient noises of the city surrounding them as they make the final leg of their short journey to Quantum Quinn's lab. Quinn was known for his wild theories, Scott was thinking. But this time his words carried weight. There was something about the observers that he hadn't told us yet. He had already demonstrated his brilliance, showing us how the double slit experiment empowered the observer to influence what it was observing. And that if it could be done by an observer watching photons, a subatomic particle, why couldn't it be done with our human consciousness as well? There is the sound of a lab door creaking open, and as they step inside, Quinn has many machines whirring. And Quinn says excitedly, I'm glad you came. I've been working on this now for days, maybe longer. When's the last time I even left this place? Well, the observer system that we talked about, that I showed you that's in place, it's not just watching you, it's influencing you. And Alejandra, alarmed, says, influencing? You mean controlling? And Quinn nods reluctantly. Well, in a sense, every time you make a decision, it's because they're observing you. And when they observe, they subtly nudge you toward a predetermined outcome. Scott says, but how? They can't be watching everyone all the time. There's, what, 5-6 billion people on Earth? And Quantum Quinn grins. Well, no, but they've got algorithms that predict your behavior. Think of it as a probability matrix. They don't need to watch you 24/7, just enough to get a read on you to know what you're likely to do next. And Alejandra says skeptically, so what about free will? And Quantum Quinn responds, free will is the biggest illusion. For most people, their decisions fall within the predicted patterns. But I've been working on something that might disrupt that. Scott and Alejandra lean in, thoroughly intrigued. I wasn't sure if Scott understood it yet. But the burning bush that Moses saw, the way that God had appeared to one of the great prophets, the burning bush was burning in front of us now, only it wasn't a bush. It was a kind of half-mad scientist and his equipment and a lot of very good AI and computers. Quantum Quinn literally dances around the lab, overeager to show off his newest invention. Electronics buzz in the background, and Quinn types furiously at a computer keyboard.
Here it is. Here it is. The back door into their system. It's risky, I'll tell you that. But if we can hack in, we can create blind spots in their surveillance. It won't destroy them completely, but it'll give us moments of real free time, free will, gaps where they can't predict or influence your choices.
And Scott says in awe, you can really do that? And Quantum Quinn smirks.
Well, with a bit of luck, the hard part is finding the right moment to act. Like I said, timing is everything. You see, they're always observing key decisions, big life choices, changes in direction. That's where they'll usually strike, because that's where it matters.
And Alejandra says, and how do we find those moments in order to set up our defenses? And Quantum Quinn says, well, leave that to me. I'll monitor your patterns, and when the time is right, I'll trigger the hack. They hacked you. Turnabout is fair play. But you need to be ready to act yourself the second that window opens. You know, I'm a scientist. I know all about numbers and computers. I'm not an action hero type, but the two of you, all athletic and good-looking people in shape, you're the type that would be able to act this thing out. You can be my boots on the ground. And Scott says, but what if we miss this opportunity? What if we don't get through the door like we're supposed to? And Quantum Quinn, now serious, says, well, then you lose the chance. And they'll be on to you. They'll know that you're on to them. It'll be a hot mess. Alejandra whispers, so we wait for the perfect moment. The tension builds in the lab as the sound of typing and the electric hum of computers and equipment intensifies. And Quantum Quinn grins. Well, exactly, Alejandra. And when that moment arrives, you will know.